girl with the right allocations, who is fast and thorough and sharp as a tack.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. And we have a girl just like that with a...
I want a girl with a short skirt and a long jacket.
And that person is Beth Terry, who's on the phone right now. How are you, Beth?
Hi. I love that song. You should hear my husband do it for karaoke. It's pretty awesome.
Ah, that's great. See? Yeah, and I'll bet you've never been introduced like that before, have you?
I never have. That was the best way, especially at 8 o'clock for me on a Sunday morning.
Absolutely. 8 a.m. in California, sunny Oakland, or is it cloudy Oakland today?
Well, so the sky looks kind of gray, but it's only 8 o'clock. It'll burn off, and it'll probably be beautiful later.
Okay, wonderful. This is Beth Terry, who wrote a book called Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. It's from Skyhorse Publishing. And, of course, all the links are at my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and I've got all that information. And it's such a pleasure to have you on the show, especially because the book is amazing. The book is just absolutely amazing. And you got to, I don't know if you've gone to my website yet, but I tell people, buy the damn book. You know, run out right now. Get the damn book today, because I've come up with a subtitle for you, by the way.
Oh, what's that?
The subtitle of the book should be, it's Plastic Free, How I Kick the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. Subtitle, Everything You Know About Plastics is Wrong.
Yeah, I had a lot to learn when I first started doing this 5 years ago. This is the book I wish had existed when I was first starting out 5 years ago. That's how I wanted to write it.
Well, you know what? That's the amazing part, Beth, is that this book didn't exist until you wrote it.
Right.
And I can't believe it didn't, because for one thing, you folks who need to know that I was amazed by how thorough the book is, and I think that's just fabulous. You have suggestions, you have links, you have facts. You take the whole issue and you dismantle it and put it back together again, and then in the midst of that, you remain positive about changing, because I don't see how we change our way of lives. You know, I was thinking as I was reading the book, of the people who are in stores and get plastic bags. And you talked about your first experience, or one of your first experiences walking in with your reusable bag and being almost apologetic for it. I've been doing that for several years, and I'm arrogant. I'm antagonistic. Here, put it in it. No, get rid of that plastic. Put it in the reusable. But no, I don't want another special one for meat. No, get that out of there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a lover, not a hater, or a fighter, whatever that line is.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Not a hater.
Very good, very good.
I had to learn to speak up. I had to learn to get outside my comfort zone. And, you know, a few years later, there was a reporter that was following me around. Actually, it was Susan Frankel who wrote the book, Plastic, A Toxic Love Story, and she was following me around to see how I lived. And she asked me at one point, don't you ever get embarrassed? And I think this was when I was in a butcher shop with my stainless steel pot getting meat for our cats. And I looked at her and I said, oh, no, once I turned 40, I stopped being embarrassed about anything. But, you know, that wasn't actually true. And I have had to learn to get outside my comfort zone and speak up and not just accept the status quo. But it's important to me, so I do it.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. I'm getting tweets already here on the show about plastics and the whether you should be putting your – you know, how did we get started putting our garbage – in plastic bags.
Yeah.
And I imagine there are people right now who'd say, oh, that's We have to. Otherwise, there would be chaos. It would be it'd be unsanitary. And I'm thinking, wait, it's just garbage and it's in a plastic bag. How sanitary is that?
Yeah.
You look at my neighborhood, it's all spilling out in the alley anyway. So
yeah. We don't use any plastic bags for our garbage. But there are strategies. I mean, there are reasons for that. First of all, the recycling doesn't need to go in a bag. So the recycling just goes into the bin as is.
Well, that's, you know, that's in Chicago, and you're probably aware, maybe you're not aware that we had a thing called blue bag here, blue bag recycling.
Mm-mm.
All right.
When
Richie Daley was in office, Richie Daley the younger, he instituted this program called Blue Bag, and this was in the early 90s. And the idea was, and it was single stream, mm-hmm. except you put them all in a blue bag. Here's the problem.
Was it a reusable bag or a disposable?
No. Disposable bag.
Oh,
you silly girl. and then they would come and you would put the recycled blue bag, the blue bag with your recyclables in it, in your garbage, with the other garbage plastic bags.
Oh, so people didn't have to go. Oh, wow.
And then they dumped everything into the big truck, smooshed it down, took it to a transfer station, and then tried to separate the recyclables.
Did they have problems with the bags clogging up the sorting machine?
Well, that was before, way before that. This was where they were doing this all by hand.
Oh, I see.
And the problem they had was that all the recyclables were contaminated because they had been smooshed in with the garbage.
Right.
And it didn't work.
Right.
And everybody knew it didn't work except the city of Chicago, which held on to that thought and that program for 15 years. Until finally they went to single stream in the big blue bins, the blue
right.
carts that we have now. Now, but that gets to the thing where you talk about people putting recyclables in plastic bags. Well, now what people do is they put their recyclables in blue bags often in and then put them in the blue carts. And I call it the revenge of the blue bag because, as you and I both know, and you write so eloquently in your book, you do not put film plastic, don't put plastic bags in with recyclables because it just gums up the recycle machinery.
And I actually have a friend that I met through my blog named Cliff who lives in the Chicago area, and he goes through the neighborhood pulling plastic bags out of people's recycle bins because he knows it's a problem. They just jam the sorting machines. Yeah.
Right. And I hardly know where to start here. There's just so much, Beth, and we're going to run out of time so fast.
How much time do we have?
Till about we got about another half hour. Okay. But I also know how chock full of stuff the book is. Let's start with your epiphany, and I'm getting tweets here on stuff. You know, one of the I just got tweeted. Why don't we have a deposit on plastic bottles in Illinois? Well, la di da. We know the answer to that is because the bottle manufacturers don't want us to have it because it helps get rid of those bottles.
Right. They really lobby against bottle deposits.
Bottle bills are states with bottle bills, meaning deposits on bottles have a lot less.
They have a much higher recycling rate.
Right, higher recycling rate, and there are fewer bottles floating around.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why the bottle manufacturers don't want it. And we don't have it in Illinois, and it's frustrating. And there have been efforts to get bottle bills passed in Illinois. There have been efforts to get bottle bills passed a lot of places. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It depends on the political will. And I would say in this climate, it's probably pretty hard to get it passed anywhere in the United States right now.
You know, speaking of this climate, it is pretty frustrating and it can be kind of depressing. And that's why we have to take things upon ourselves. You know, we have to quote something that's endlessly quoted, we have to be the change. And as Obama said in his speech when he was running for office, you know, we are the change that we're waiting for. We can't just depend on our elected officials to do it for us. And that's one of the reasons that I think personal changes are so important and why we have to take the initiative ourselves. And we do need bigger systemic changes. We have to get bans on plastic bags and bottle bills and all kinds of legislation. And I list a lot of the things that I think we need in the book. But But we have to start with ourselves, too, and look at how we're, as individuals, contributing to this problem. And that's how I got started.
I'm going to get to that in a second. I just want to tell you, I just got another tweet that said, wrap your garbage in newspaper, not plastic, to take out. Do you like that idea?
Yeah. Now, if you're able to compost, so this is the second thing. So, of course, we don't put our garbage in plastic bags. But then we, for all the wet stuff, we compost it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're able to do that, that's a fabulous way to deal with the wet stuff. If you can't, you know, one way to reduce the amount of plastic bags that you're using is to keep the wet stuff separate. And, yeah, you can put it in newspaper or you can put it in, you know, any kind of packaging that you still have left over. I wouldn't buy bags and I wouldn't waste money on, you know, the compostable bags if you're just going to put them in the trash. And I explain in the book why compostable bags are not good if they're just going to the landfill.
Let's back up a little bit here. Let's get to some of the basics. I got a couple of calls. We'll get to you guys in a sec. I want to talk to Beth just a little bit here about why plastics are so – do you use it as a singular or a plural, by the way?
I just say plastic.
Plastic, because –
There are
plastics, yes, and that's the point. There are many, many different kinds of plastics.
Yeah.
And to understand plastics, you really have to start at the molecular level.
Yeah.
And you do explain some of that in layman's terms in the book. Why is plastic impossible to get rid of as right now as we know it?
Well, plastic, there's a couple of things. First of all, it's these huge molecules that we've developed. So plastic is made... It's a polymer, and a polymer is made of monomers, which are smaller segments, all strung together into these huge, huge, huge molecules. And there are no microbes right now that we know of, although they're discovering a few here and there that can break down specific plastics. But for the most part, in general, there aren't any microbes that have evolved in order to break it down. And the reason that they haven't evolved to break it down is because we've only had plastic for the last 100 years or so. It's so new that there hasn't been time for anything to evolve. And, you know, nature is full of polymers. I mean, we're made of polymers, trees, cellulose is polymer, hair, fingernail, horn, shell. There's lots of things in nature that are polymers, but they've existed for so long, along with the microbes that break them down, that... you know, they biodegrade, but these plastics are so new that they just don't. So they're a big problem.
Because, they cannot be broken down by natural processes.
They will degrade in the sense that they will fall apart, but they just fall apart into small particles of plastic. The molecules themselves don't break down.
Right, and this is the problem we're having, obviously, with animals ingesting plastic because they mistake it for food.
Right.
And as I pointed out, I had do you pronounce Pacific gyre or gyre?
I say gyre.
Gyre, okay.
Yeah.
We may have a vote on that. Okay. But as I pointed out earlier in the program, there isn't just the Pacific Gyre. There's the North Pacific Gyre, the South Pacific Gyre, the North Atlantic Gyre, the South Atlantic Gyre, and the Indian Ocean Gyre.
Right. And they all have plastic in them.
And they're all swirling around.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. And I found out about this about a decade ago. It was right around the time that they were first discovered. And it's interesting that they had to be discovered. I interviewed a guy who had done a round the world yacht race.
Mm-hmm.
And there he was in the South Pacific Ocean in the middle of nowhere. And he said, suddenly I came across this stream of garbage and plastic and junk.
Was it Charlie Moore?
No, it wasn't Charlie Moore.
Oh.
It was somebody local here who had participated in a yacht race around the world.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I came across this stream of garbage. And I started to follow it. And I followed it for days. And nobody else was around. There was no land in sight. It was in the middle of nowhere. And it never ended. He never found the end of it. That was a revelation to me.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, as I found out later, there's the Pacific Gyre and then the other gyres.
Right.
But getting back to plastic, so we have polymers in nature. Plastic is a polymer that's not in nature.
Right. Right.
And so there's no way to break it down. So
right.
as you point out in the book, when you recycle, you're not really recycling plastic, you're downcycling. Could you explain that, please?
Yeah, well, I mean a couple things by that. First of all, plastics in general don't get recycled into the same item that they were originally. So, for example, a plastic bottle doesn't generally get recycled into another plastic bottle. It gets recycled into a secondary product, usually a textile like carpet or polar fleece or polyester, some kind of fabric. And those materials generally don't get further recycled. They get thrown away when they wear out. There is some recycling, but for the most part, they don't. So that's one way that I mean when I say downcycling, because you're not closing the loop. You're just slowing down the process from cradle to grave. And in another sense, it's downcycling because every time you recycle plastic, it gets weakened. It can't be recycled indefinitely. And so at the end, when it can't be recycled anymore, you're still going to have these plastic molecules in the environment. You know, paper gets weaker every time it's recycled too, but at the end of its life, it's going to biodegrade and plastic won't. So that's what I mean by downcycling.
Mm-hmm. And the misconception, and this is why I subtitled the book, Everything You Know About Plastics Is Wrong, is that you can, as long as you toss it into the recycling bin,
right.
you've taken care of, you've done your duty.
Right. You know, you don't know what happens to it after you toss it in the recycle bin, because recycling is a business. And if there's no market for a particular type of plastic, it's not going to get recycled. It's going to end up in the landfill. And so there are certain plastics that are more valuable for recycling, number ones and number twos in particular, and some others to a lesser extent. But, you know, it all depends on if there's a buyer out there for it. And most of the plastic recycling in this country gets shipped to China. There is some recycling happening mostly in the southeast of this country, and there are companies that are trying to develop our recycling infrastructure here, but for the most part, it gets shipped overseas. And the conditions in which it's recycled overseas are not necessarily the best environmentally or health-wise.
No matter what the officials in China tell you.
Yeah.
Because, oh, no, we've cleaned it up. Oh, no, don't worry about it. It's much better than it was 10 years ago. Well, yeah, and then they were trying to get the smog out of Beijing when they had the Olympics there. But
right.
So we kind of have a pretty good idea of what's going on in China.
Yeah.
And the other thing you point out is, and again, getting back to the molecular level, mm-hmm. it's not just we have a plastic polymer and one is a number one. Oh, and that's the other thing you point out in the book, which is just amazing, is that when you see the number on a piece of plastic mm-hmm. With the recycling symbol around it, that doesn't necessarily mean that it can be recycled. That's just the kind of plastic that it is.
Those chasing arrows are very misleading because people associate that with recycling. And those numbers don't mean recycling. That's the resin identification code. And in fact, the FTC has regulations about how you can use that. You can't put that number next to the word recyclable or recycling or anything like that because they don't want it to be confused. And I think they should use a different type of symbol, something that doesn't look like recycling. Because, you know, whether something's recyclable or not depends on your community. It depends on what resources are available, what markets are available, what your community is equipped to collect and bale. It has nothing to do with what's on that bottle. You have to check with your community and find out. Because, you know, sometimes communities will take one and two bottles, narrow-neck bottles, but they won't take one and two containers. You know, every community has different rules.
You know, and that points out something that needs to be addressed, I think, in this country. If we're going to do anything properly, we got to stop having this piecemeal system of recycling. And I know that conservatives will scream that the government's taking over the world. But if you don't even know what you can recycle in your own community because every community is different, that's insane.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The thing that we need to keep in mind, though, is that before we think about recycling, we have to think about refusing the stuff in the first place.
Oh, yeah, and I love that's one of your R's. Reduce, reuse, recycle, and refuse.
Refuse first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we'll put it refuse, reduce,
yeah.
reuse, recycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, and I do, to some degree, I'm not as good as you are by any stretch of the imagination, and I haven't studied it as much as you have. How much have you reduced your use of plastic?
Well, in 2011, my plastic waste was about 2 pounds, which is approximately 2% of what Americans throw away, plastic that Americans throw away at home. And that doesn't include what the plastic waste they generate while they're not at home. And the things that were included in that were a lot of things were cat-related, actually. There's a supplement powder that we give our cats that goes into the homemade cat food we make them. And we go through a bottle of that maybe once every 2 or 3 months. And there's packing tape in there because, you know, whenever I order something online, I always ask for no plastic packaging ahead of time, and it seems like the tape is the one area where a lot of vendors have a hard time. Prescription bottles are another one. It would be really nice if we could take the same bottle back to the pharmacy and have it refilled with the same prescription, but in California, that's against the law. So I end up with prescription bottles. And then just odds and ends, things that I accidentally acquired. You know, despite my best efforts.
It sounds like a lot of the laws that are out there to protect human beings end up hurting the planet.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know, but I do think that there is a big push to freak people out about germs nowadays. I mean, people
Absolutely.
Are so germ-phobic, and plastic is the solution to that, right? Plastic keeps everything clean. It keeps everything sanitized. You know, your apples and your oranges don't have to touch each other because, you know, they might contaminate each other in the bag. Everything's sealed for your protection. I mean, it's ridiculous. And, you know, children's immune systems need to be exposed to germs in order to develop. So, but that's probably a whole other topic.
Well, it's a related topic. And I'm with you. I go to a grocery store a few years ago. They started on this kick of putting everything, sealing it, all your produce. You know,
yeah.
It used to be you could go to the bin, you pick the produce out, you throw it in a bag, and you go home. And now it's all sealed. You can't even find romaine lettuce without it being sealed and protected from you and from everything. And
Do you have farmers markets that you can go to?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and so that's farmers markets are one of my number one solutions for people. You know, if you can't go to the grocery store and find produce that's not packaged in plastic. Shop your local farmers market because you're doing a lot more for the planet by doing that anyway. You know, you're buying local, you're supporting local farmers, you're getting generally produce that has fewer pesticides and chemicals, and you can skip the packaging altogether. And, you know, one tip that I have is when I go to the farmers market, the strawberries and blueberries and things like that generally come in a plastic basket. I just dump them into my own container or my own bag and hand the basket back to the vendor because they love to have them back to reuse.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that at the grocery store. At the grocery store, they'll just look at you and say, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, it's true. They will. They have no clue. They're not set up for that. We're talking to Beth Terry, the author of Plastic Free, How I Kick the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. I'm sure a lot of people listening, you know, some of the simple stuff is not so simple. You start with plastic bags, and I'm glad you do because
right.
there was a bag. There's a bill sitting on Governor Quinn's desk in Illinois here.
Right, I know.
That would institute a plastic bag recycling program. I have spoken against this bill.
Yeah.
I have been to rallies against this bill. It is just a way for the plastic bag industry to keep the status quo.
Right, because they want to ban municipalities from banning plastic bags, right? It's a ban against
right.
bans.
It, right.
Yeah.
It's a ban against bans.
Yeah.
All right. No, you know, it's a bill that would, it says, oh, no, we're going to institute this wonderful recycling program for plastic bags. However, if you
want. It works so well in California. You know, we recycle a whopping like 5% of our plastic bags because we have a similar thing going on.
Right. It didn't work there. It doesn't work anywhere. Yeah. And I put that on a Facebook page, and somebody said, you can't say that it doesn't work anywhere. I said, yeah, I can. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. No, it doesn't. And the best thing to do is just stop using plastic bags. Yeah. Just get them out of your life.
So has he still considering it?
He's considering it. We don't, you know, you got to be a Kremlinologist to figure out what the governor's going to do. All right. He's hinted that he might veto it. And it was voted through with a veto-proof majority. Here's the problem. Or the good news, actually, is that if he vetoes the bill, Governor Quinn vetoes the bill, then we all get on the horn. And I'm telling, and I'm speaking to my listeners here, that if he vetoes that bill, then you got to call your legislator and say, there's a reason he vetoed it. It's a very bad bill. Do not vote for it again.
Yeah.
Do not override the veto. All right. Listen, I need to get some people on who've been holding, and then I got to do a break and all kinds of stuff. And we have so little time, so much to talk about. Let's go to David, who's in your neck of the woods, Beth. David's in San Francisco. Good morning, David. You're on the Novak Show.
Hey, morning, Beth and Mike. You know, a couple of different things. When I heard you talking specifically about plastics, I'm wondering if you've ever heard about George Washington Carver. When he was inventing all of those thousand things from the peanut and the soybean, he specifically was coming up with biodegradable plastics, some that would break down in water, some that would break down in the sunlight. If I understand right, some of them would break down in a matter of hours, some would break down in a week's time, but they were basically cellulose fiber, and whether they were made from the husks of peanuts or soybeans or something like that. So I'm wondering if you've ever heard of some of these formulas and what that would do to the industry, because basically they would break down into biodegradable composition, which would then, you know, become fertilizer again.
Right.
And the other thing, too, is, since you were discussing the gyre and the plastic floating around out in the oceans, obviously the rubble coming from Japan's earthquake and tsunami is now hitting the West Coast.
Yeah.
And it would seem to me that if we are going to call ourselves a civilization, and this civilization is in a bad economic downturn, so there are a lot of ships that are not being used in this bad economic time, those ships could be used to basically become trawlers and drag up all of that, whether it's the plastics in the gyre or picking up this rubble before it gets all the way across the ocean and collecting it before it hits land. Because some of this is hazardous waste, and if it's picked up early, it's not going to dissipate. You know, the pollution industry basically takes the position is, dilution is the solution to pollution. So they say that if it just breaks up and breaks up and breaks up into tinier pieces, then it's going to be the solution.
No, that's worse.
It's actually worse.
Right, absolutely. So picking it up early, gathering it early, is the solution to pollution.
Yeah, there are quite a few schemes, actually, of organizations, companies that are forming to go out and, quote, clean up the gyre and collect the plastic and use it for various things. There are waste-to-energy schemes where they want to collect the plastic and turn it into fuel, turn it into oil. That's all very well and good, but as you said, a lot of it is breaking down into smaller and smaller pieces, and they can't just drag the ocean and collect all of that because they're going to be collecting all the marine life along with it if they were to collect it at that small a level. So, you know,
the other plastic
particles are mixed up with the plankton with the zooplankton in the ocean.
Yeah. I was going to say the other thing that you actually bring this out in the book is that also sends a bad message because it makes us believe that we can keep producing all of this stuff and then clean it up and don't worry. See, we took care of the problem, except that we didn't take care of the problem. As you said, it breaks down into such small particles. We're never going to recover those.
Right. And in terms of bioplastics, so I do have a section in the book that explains bioplastics. And, you know, originally the first plastics that were not truly synthetic.
Hey, wait, hold on a second. David, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for a great contribution to the program.
Yeah, no trouble. I just the idea of being continual production, that's not necessarily true. If we were to gather it, there've got to be ways of washing out the bio, the plankton.
The problem is that it's actually right now a lot cheaper for companies to make products out of virgin resin than it is to make it out of recycled plastic in a lot of cases. So they don't go for it, you know.
Well, I know, but they're in oil production. In other words, most plastic is based upon oil, mm-hmm. and the endless oil wells that are coming up, you know, we're creating plastic out of oil. And mm-hmm. when you imagine that it's 5-million-year-old dinosaurs, it's a non-renewable source. So the
right.
idea that we've got to come up with some other alternative system.
Right.
There
are companies,
storage.
Yeah. You know, Coke and Pepsi both have developed plant-based bottles that are made from plants as opposed to fossil fuels. But the problem with the plant-based bottles is that those plastics, even though the carbon in them comes from plants, they are chemically identical to PET, the type of plastic that bottles are made out of. They're chemically identical to the fossil-based plastic. They don't break down. They're not biodegradable. They are recyclable just like any other bottle is recyclable. So I think that with fossil fuels running out, companies are going to move more towards plant-based, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's better just because it's based on plants. And a lot of those plants that are used are grown with chemical, you know, petrochemical fertilizers, pesticides,
well, sure, yeah.
GMOs, et cetera.
All right, David,
appreciate it.
All right, thanks for calling. 773-763-9278. Let me take care of some business here. Beth Terry, the author of Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. I'm telling you, pick up the book. Read it. It will change your life, and it will make you miserable for a while.
No. It's positive, inspiring, miserable.
I know it is. But for a few seconds, when the reality hits home that I'm doing everything wrong, yeah, for a few seconds, you're going to have that. And I know you're really positive. You got to understand, I'm the dark side here, okay? all right, you're the and I'm the dark side, but I'm bringing this out and saying,
yeah.
Have at it. I'm on your team.
I don't want people to think that the first chapter is about the problems. The rest of the book is about solutions.
Yes,
right?
It is, including things like I didn't even know, like water stations and stop. I think about those people in line at Costco and who are in front of me with their cart and they've got this case of water bottles, or two or three cases of water bottles, and they're like zombies. Good water bottle, good water bottle, good. And it's like
that Costco water is just tap water.
And that's the other thing, as you point out in the book, because it's bottled doesn't mean it's any healthier. In fact, often it's less healthy than your tap water because guess what, folks? You can't deliver water to people in their homes unless it's healthy, unless it's not going to kill them. So that's all I drink. I drink tap water. I don't have a filter. I don't have any of that stuff. I'm like, I don't care. I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about poisoning them. I'm just poisoning myself, but it's not. I'm drinking tap water because the city of Chicago wouldn't send it to you if it weren't healthy for you.
Well, and the thing is, tap water is more highly regulated than bottled water. Tap water is regulated by the EPA, and it has to be tested regularly, and they have to publish their test results so people can have access to them.
Yeah.
And bottled water companies are not required to do that. Some of them have been because of pressure, but it's voluntary. They don't have to publish those results at all.
Yeah. All right. Hang on a second, Beth Terry. And I'm sorry. I'm the guy who's going to be throwing spokes in your wheel here as we do this conversation. And you just overcome it. You just say, no, Mike, you're wrong. This is all very positive, and this works. It's going to happen because I believe it. I don't know how soon we'll get rid of plastic, but you are the great first step. Let's go to the phones again and talk to Mike in Waukegan. Good morning, Mike.
How are you doing there, Beth and Mike? How's it going?
Great.
Hi.
Hi. I was going to, that earlier caller sort of stole my thunder regarding trolling. I was going to bring up dredging, the plastic that would provide a lot of stimulus jobs, but As far as the municipal water, I've been hearing bad things about chlorine and fluoride. So I don't know if it's the best thing to consider.
Well, okay, well, that's a really great point. Beth, how do you address the issue? What is chlorine, fluoride? Yeah, a lot of folks go, yeah, that's not so good for you. Versus what's in a water bottle? How would you compare the two?
So in my book, I actually talk about how to choose a water filter for people who feel like there are things in the water that they don't want to drink. And the first step is to get your water tested and see what's in it in the first place. And then the Environmental Working Group actually has, and I can give you the reference for this, they have a guide on their website where you can go and choose a water filter based on the types of things that you want to filter out. If it's just chlorine, chlorine dissipates if you leave your water sitting out on the counter. It dissipates pretty fast. But if it's other chemicals and fluoride, then you do need a filter for that. But in terms of the bottled water, those chemicals can also be found in bottled water as well, because there's no, like we were saying before, there's the testing that's required for tap water is not required for bottled water. And in fact, for a long time, they didn't even have a standard in bottled water for phthalates, which are chemicals that are used in plastics to make them softer. And probably the reason for that was because, you know, there are phthalates in those plastic bottles.
That sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it, the whole
thing?
Yeah. You know, what I was going to originally call up about, though, was the packaging. You know, I mean, you mentioned, you know, refilling prescription bottles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you buy something in the drugstore in these containers, and they're usually just a small fraction of the way full. It's like they're, and they do that, I think, to make you think you're getting more, and all we're doing is just filling up these landfills, you know, by a factor. You put the number on it. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's can't we force these companies to, you know, use the container that is commensurate with the amount of pills or whatever it is they're putting out?
You know what? Companies respond when customers write to them and speak out.
They should know this.
Yeah, you know, actually, you just played right into her hands, Mike, because that's really the – I'm going to let you go, but you're going to hear her talk about – that's really the core message of the book.
Yeah.
And thanks for the great contribution. And go into that just a little bit, Beth, because, as you say, people or businesses respond when people speak up.
They do. And I've discovered this several times, just ever since I started this project in 2007. I've been doing this for 5 years now. I started out, you know, making personal changes, but as I would discover things that couldn't be found plastic-free, I would write to the company and say, I really need this product, I really like it, but I don't like your packaging. There was a smaller company called Laundry Tree, which I write about in the book, which makes a laundry product called Soap Nuts, and they were packaging them in plastic bags. And so I wrote to the company and I said, I really like your product, but have you considered not packaging it in plastic, but in something more sustainable? And the woman wrote back to me and she said, you know, I really have been thinking that we need to get away from plastic, but I don't know what to switch to. Will you help me? And I don't even think I really helped her. All I did was give her encouragement. And in less than a month, she had switched to a recycled paper package instead of the plastic bags. Now, that was possible because she was a small business, and it's easier for small businesses to make changes like that. But back in 2008, when this is talking about water filters again, when I went to change my Brita water filter cartridge, I realized that was another hunk of plastic, and I didn't know what could be done with it. So I found out, I went online and I did some research, and I found out that in Germany, where the original Brita company is located, Brita had created a recycling facility for its cartridges. And in Europe, people can take their Brita filters back to the store where they bought it and put it in a bin, and it's shipped back to Brita's facility where they take it apart and recycle everything. And I thought, well, if they can do that there, why can't they do that here? And here in North America, the Brita company is owned by Clorox, and Clorox happens to be down the street from me in Oakland. So I thought, well, I'll just talk to Clorox because I didn't know. I thought, why not? They should listen to me. I'm their customer. So I wrote them a letter They said, we don't recycle in the United States because recycling facilities don't exist for water filters in the United States. And I said, well, you know, in Europe, Brita created the facility for recycling them. They didn't depend on communities to do it. Anyway, to make a long story short, I found out there were a lot of other people that were interested in recycling their filters. So we started a campaign. We made a web page. We put together a petition. And I actually opened a post office box and asked people to mail me their used Brita filters because I was going to take them down the street to Clorox and say, here, you guys, do something with these. And after 8 months and 16,000 signatures and over 600 Brita filters from all over North America and Hawaii, I got a call from the brand manager of Brita saying, we wanted you to be the first to know that we have developed a way to recycle Brita filters. We have partnered with Preserve, the company that makes recycled toothbrushes, and Whole Foods also. And you can take your Brita filters back to participating Whole Foods, and they'll be sent to Preserve, and Preserve will recycle them. Or, you know, downcycle, as I explained before.
Right.
I didn't know as much about recycling back then, and I thought that recycling was the answer. But the point is just that companies do listen, and they just need to know that there is the consumer will for it, that their customers want this, because they need to be able to go to their shareholders and say it's worth it because it will increase our sales because people really want this.
So complain. Be the squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
That's sort of the gist of that. We could do this all day, and I think I'm going to invite you back at some point, Beth, because I want to go into this a little more. We didn't even get into the chemicals that companies inject into the polymers and that are released and off-gas from.
And we didn't get into very many solutions either. Don't forget, the book is all full of solutions, Mike.
Yes. be positive, Beth. I'll let you go ahead. You have the forum. So, yeah, it is. It's about solutions. How do you fix this? And we don't have to be addicted to plastic. We really, really, really don't. And it's time to change. And get the word out to the companies that make it. So Beth Terry, Plastic Free, How I Kick the Plastic Habit, and how you can too. Go to my website, and all the links are there. And I want you to buy the book today. And you're going to see a little spike, the Mike Novak bump, when people pick up that book. And then you're going to be back on the show, and we'll talk about more solutions.
Awesome. That'd be great.
Beth, you have a wonderful day.
You too. This has been fun.